Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:48 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is November 10th, and we had an exceptionally big day today in terms of risk appetite returning, and it was all on the back of CPI coming in modestly below where it was expected to be. And that fueled speculation that at the peak of inflation is in, it will give more room for the Federal Reserve to not raise rates as much as the market was fearing, and potentially it brings forward the time when the Federal Reserve will in fact begin to cut rates. But one thing that people don't seem to pay much attention to, it's that usually when the Fed starts to cut rates after a tightening cycle, that's usually when the market's rolling over. So then we've had a significant contraction in the 10-year minus the 3-month today because the 10-year yield broke lower, but the 3-month yield didn't move. So it was flirting with an inversion last week. Now we're at negative 32 basis points and accelerating lower again. Now, this is basically the precondition for a future recession. But as we've seen in other instances, it's usually after the inversion that we get a rebound in asset prices and risk appetite because investors are now more concerned with the peak in inflation and the return of normal circumstances, and are not giving any due consideration to the fact that there is a lag between the peak in money supply growth in February of last year, the peak in money growth internationally, which is now negative, and on top of all of that, the fact that bond yields are at the long end are now coming down. So that's not just pricing in the peak in inflation. That's potentially pricing in deflation. And I've been nattering on for several months about the fact that quantitative tightening contributes to deflationary forces. Now, it's quite normal. Now we can just see the fact on this chart of the 10-year that yields went up a lot in the last 6 months. But the size of the Fed's balance sheet has rolled over. So it isn't coming down a lot. It's come down from a bit less than 9 trillion to about 8.67 trillion. So about, let's call it 400 billion has been rolled off of the balance sheet. But during the last runoff, they really only took 750 billion out of circulation in 2018 and through to 2019. At the beginning of the runoff stage, you see that yields go up. So let's just pay attention to the fact that the beginning of the runoff stage in 2018 was right around the beginning of the year. And in that time, yields went up. So, right at the beginning of 2018, the yield broke on the upside and went from about 2.39 up to a peak 6 months later, or let's say it broke out in January, 9 months later, of about 3.23. So, it was a meaningful move. And then we can think about the fact that the breakout here at the runoff only began about 3 or 4 months ago, and we've had this meaningful move as well. But after that, we had a compression in yields, and it's a very significant compression in yields. And I think that is exactly what we're going to have on this occasion too, because investors are going to start to think about the potential that we're not just going to have inflation coming back down, but that we're looking at the potential for deflation. And one of the most important things to highlight is that employment data is a lagging indicator. So I think it's important to point out that bond yields have now clearly broken down. This is a real dynamic move down through 4%, breaking the sequence of higher reaction lows, pulling down into the underlying range. Now, it hasn't quite yet broken the midpoint danger line, but I think it is likely that it will. Then it's also worth highlighting that with bond yields coming back down, then the potential for the interest rate differential between the US and the EU is likely to contract. So the dollar index was down in a dynamic manner in here today. I've been very much of the view that it was the dollar is the primary asset that's been retarding the ability of gold to rebound, and it needed to pull back through the 110 area to reignite interest in gold. Well, it did that 3 days ago, popped on the upside yesterday, and now has come down in a really dynamic manner. And it, we're back in the region of the low and gone through the small little range that we had in August, September. So this does look like a real clear break of the trend, and there's obviously potential here for additional downside. And obviously the first area of potential support is the 200-day moving average, but I think the more important point here is that this is not only a larger pullback, but it's broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. So the dollar's uptrend has been broken. It's really then only a question of how long does it take for it to pull back in a dynamic manner and a substantial manner. But gold isn't losing any time rebounding, and it was up nearly $50 in here today, and it has now clearly broken the 7-month downtrend. So there was a very consistent sequence of lower rally highs, which has now been broken. It's confirming support in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and it's testing the region of the 200-day moving average. Additional upside over the next few days would then push it back above the 200-day MA, confirm more than short-term, and begin to signal medium-term support in the region of $1,600. I also highlighted the fact that when gold breaks out of these long ranges, it really tends to be explosive. So from the initial move in June of 2019 to the peak in August of 2020, so 14 months, it went up 52%. And that's not the first time gold has done exceptionally well after breaking out of one of these lengthy ranges. In fact, this is what investors buy gold for in the first place. The reason people like gold is because of its explosive ability to surprise on the upside. So it might take a while to get back up towards the $2,000 level. But I suspect that by the time we get to the end of the winter or the beginning of spring, gold will be at new all-time highs. And that would suggest that the dollar has got quite a ways to fall. But I think it's also particularly important here just to pay attention to risk appetites. The NASDAQ is up in a very dynamic manner in here today. It's back above the 1,000-day moving average. I've closed out all my shorts. I took the profits on my hedge short put positions that were bought back in August when the market was rolling over, and I didn't get the best prices for them. It would have been a lot better off if I had sold yesterday rather than today, but there we are. And I took the loss on my, it was a small loss on the NASDAQ and a 1,000-point loss on the Dow Jones Industrials. And then I've also gone in and bought more precious metals. I do think that we are in the second psychological perception stage of the bull market in precious metals, and therefore silver should outperform. So I bought the silver miners ETF, and it was up in a dynamic manner in here today. And then I also bought let me see if I can remember the ticker. I bought the Double Line Income Solutions Fund. And that's very oversold and has a yield of 11%. And they tend to pay their special dividend in December. so I thought I'd buy it before they do that. But the bigger point here, of course, is that high yield trades like equity, and high yield was bouncing really quite emphatically in here today, and this time from the region of the 2020 lows. So we've had a really profound bear market in the fixed income sector. And there's the real potential that as inflationary pressures start to give way, that some of these yields are going to really become too appetizing to pass up for investors, because it is possible now to capture 10%, 11, 12% yields in the high yield sector. And that's, I think, certainly something that's a more opportune time to buy fixed income when the yield has gone up and inflation is moderating, then the potential for fixed income to do well in subsequent years is obviously much better. It's the worst time possible to buy fixed income is when it has a negative yield and when prices are exceptionally high. And that was the condition that we've had for years previous to this bear market. So I think some of the bigger opportunities are certainly in fixed income right now. But they're also going to be in the emerging markets. So if we look at the offshore renminbi, it was up in a really significant dynamic manner in here today. So this is a low now of at least near-term significance for the renminbi, potentially medium-term significance. Then the Korean won is also starting to strengthen here. Now we don't have up-to-date information for it right now, but it's been rallying all week. So this is, I think, a lead for how investors are thinking about where some of the value is in the emerging currency areas. And then we have the Brazilian real, which has been a tower of strength for most of the last few years, but it was weaker today. So obviously we've had the change of government, and investors are still waiting to see how the Lula administration is, which is obviously left-leaning, is going to tackle the fiscal picture. But Brazil has at least got a control of its inflation, and there's the potential for interest rates to start to come back down next year. Then let's think about India. Well, the most important issues for India are energy related, and if the dollar starts to come back down, well, then that does inflate commodity prices for dollar investors. But if other currencies can rise, and it helps to moderate the inflationary pressures that come from imported commodities, and that's certainly beneficial for a country like India. So the Nifty was in negative territory today, but I don't think it's a massive logical leap to anticipate that there is going to be a substantial rebound in emerging market assets tomorrow. The missing ingredient for interest in commodities and emerging markets has been the strength of the dollar. With that starting to roll over, it's going to light a fire under some of these undervalued assets. So there is clear scope for emerging markets to become much more of a factor. What I found especially interesting today was that it was gold and copper rebounded in a really dynamic manner, and copper pushed up out of this short-term range and is now testing the region of the 200-day moving average. So this is the do or die area. But the one thing that's been holding back at the copper sector has been the outlook for China. If China is in fact looking at a hybrid program for reopening or a hybrid program for locking down, then that's beneficial for copper demand growth. And then, of course, we have the COP27 conference going on right now, and a lot of support coming through for renewable energy. the other issue that's been holding back the solar sector has been interest rates. So with yields coming back down, the solar ETF rebounded in a really emphatic fashion. Of course, the renewables aren't going to do it on their own. So uranium is also steadying here from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. If we are in fact at the peak of the dollar and yields, then there is clear scope for the more value-oriented portions of emerging markets to do well, and more of the infrastructure sector to attract attention. The fact that companies like Caterpillar came through with strong earnings over the last week or two and have really rebounded in an emphatic fashion, that does support the view that there is going to be a lot more infrastructure development. And it's not just that kind of infrastructure that is vanity projects from the perspective of politicians, but real world infrastructure required to both diversify away from geopolitical hotspots, to build up flood defenses because of the threat of storms, build new waterways, or and do mitigation strategies to try and support the flow of water through the many river structures around the world. And all of that is going to require a substantial amount of infrastructure, commodities, and money. So if inflationary pressures start to moderate, then there will be enthusiasm. But I think we are still a little early, and that we will have to go through a recession before we get the really big moves. But in the short term, we've certainly moved back into a risk-on environment. It is quite normal to have a really good-sized rally immediately following the inversion of the yield curve, and since the 10-year minus the 3-month is doing it now, then that supports the view that we get a risk-on rebound before corporate earnings really do surprise on the downside. And then we start to see that priced in, and we come back down again. But for the meantime, it's more likely that prices go up first, and then subsequently that we move into the differentiation period, where the kinds of sectors that will thrive in the coming decade continue to outperform, and those that have seen their best days underperform. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.